Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at the studios of KHOI in beautiful downtown Ames. This is a community radio station. Well, we had quite a burst of cold weather, and today is another one of those. Ah, yes, we have cold weather now. It is winter in central Iowa. And, of course, because it's the coldest couple days of the year, last weekend was the Practical Farmers of Iowa conference. And it always happens. Could they schedule it in January? But it's always a real cold one. So this year we had a face-to-face, or should I say mask-to-mask conference. Lots of people showed up in the Sheman building on campus, and it was nice to see everybody, even though we were all masked and everybody was careful, and there were lots of folks there. A good job was had by all. The conference was called Facing the Horizon, and lots of good speakers, lots of good information. Oh, and speaking of cold, the James Webb Space Telescope it called home, and it said it's where it's supposed to be. How did they figure that out? And it's out there in space, all kind of unfolded. It's ready to start working, and they're going to start tweaking with it and all that kind of stuff. But it's out there because it wants to be cold. The only thing that ever came from Earth, I think, that wants to be that cold. But three cheers for the James Webb Space Telescope. It's out there, folks. It's out there. Today, we are going to travel to the Catalonian region of Spain. That's the northeastern part of Spain, the upper right-hand corner. We're going to do another cookbook adventure. What a nice thing to do. Think about food and cultures from a warmer place on the planet. And Donna got a book from the library called Catalan Food, Culture and Flavors from the Mediterranean by author Daniel Olivella. And joining us at our kitchen table today is Donna. Introduce our guest.
Okay, we have with us today Dr. Paula Herrera Ciclodi, who is in the physics department at ISU, and she's also the wife of the guest last week that we had, Gio, who is from Georgia. So we cook with Gio and Paula quite frequently because we all really, really love good food. Paula grew up largely in Barcelona, which is kind of the major city of the Catalan region, and she has cooked for us some lovely paellas over the time and a lot of other Barcelona specialties, so we thought we'll do our armchair travel today with Paula. So welcome, Paula.
Hi. Very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Are you going to say a few words in the Catalan language, or is it a dialect, or is it a language?
It's a language. Oh, people will get very bad if you call it a dialect.
Okay, it's not a dialect. Got that. Okay.
It's a language of its own, sort of in between Spanish and French. If you know either one of them, it will help you a lot when you're learning it. A language of its own.
What was it like to grow up in that area? It sounds warmer than here.
I actually, one of the things that entertains me a lot this time of the year is I send pictures back to my friends in Barcelona. Hey, look what my backyard looks like. And here's a picture, a snapshot of the temperature. and they all go, oh, my God, how could you live there? I actually love it. But they can't believe I'm still alive. Yes, well, we have the right equipment to live in this climate. Snow plows, boots, yeah. We complain when it's 50 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So Barcelona and the whole region is bordered on the Mediterranean. So obviously you have a lot of good fish in your diet, right? Yes, there is a lot of seafood in the diet, definitely. And one of my biggest challenges when I moved here to the U.S. was finding good sources of seafood because I was not about to remove that from my regular meals. It's gotten better over time. You get more and more seafood everywhere. But also I found that Asian supermarkets are fantastic. It's frozen.
Yes,
it's frozen, but there's a lot of things that you can find.
Yes, and sometimes frozen fish is better than not frozen fish because we are, you know, at least 1,000 miles, if not more, from any ocean around here. So the Hy-Vee has a good fish department.
Yes, it has. They even recently started carrying octopus, whole octopus.
Wow.
We were so delighted when we found out.
Yes, we have been delighted with that. I'm trying to imagine that there's much demand, but here in Ames. So let's encourage the demand. Paula, what do you do with octopus? It's called pulpo in Spanish. What's it in Catalan?
Pop. It's a very cute name. Pop. Pop.
P-O-P?
P-O-P. Pop. Very simple to remember.
All right. If one were to go to the Hy-Vee and get a pop, what would you do with it?
Well, actually, one of my favorite recipes to do with pop is not particularly Catalan. It's actually from the opposite corner of Spain, from Galicia, that little corner of Spain that is above Portugal.
Mm-hmm. And on the Atlantic, right?
Exactly, where they eat even more seafood than we do.
Well, they have a bigger ocean there.
Yes, they are really completely surrounded.
Now, wait a minute. When you see the octopus in the case, is it the whole octopus, or is it already cut up in tentacles, or what are we looking at here?
It is the whole thing.
Buy the whole thing?
And you can buy the whole thing, or you can buy parts of it. They'll chop it up and give you.
Okay, because I mean, obviously, octopuses come in many, many, many sizes, from the tiny little baby ones that you get in, like, well, it's frutti di mare in Italian. You know, the little fruits of the sea, and sometimes they're like an inch big. How big are the octopuses that you're seeing in the local markets?
Oh, these are big octopi. I would say that
a foot.
When you lift them, and so their tentacles hang down, mm-hmm. they are probably 2 or even 3 feet long.
Oh, that's quite large.
Yes, it is. They are really large. The tentacles can hang down for quite a bit.
So you can buy a couple of tentacles, then what do?
You can do that, or you can go for the whole thing. Well, the thing with octopus is that it's actually, of all the octopi, squid, calamari family, it might be one of the ones that you can have the hardest time cooking so that it's right, if you don't know what you're doing, actually. That's all. If you just try to cook it without instructions, because it can be very tough. Originally, when you buy it fresh or when you just caught it in the sea, you need to tenderize it.
In Mexico, I've seen people slinging the poor octopus by its tentacles against the rocks to tenderize
Absolutely.
It.
That's the traditional way to tenderize an octopus. Now, the equivalent effect can be obtained by simply freezing the octopus. That's a lot easier. Let's show
you. Oh, it breaks down the cell walls. Okay.
Correct. It's the same effect. And I believe the octopus we're getting at Hy-Vee has already been frozen, so it's ready to cook.
Oh, okay. That makes it easier. Now, do you cook it like you would a squid, where either you have to cook it very quickly or else a really, really long time, and in between is just tough? I think so. The recipe that I'm thinking of for the Galician octopus, they say back in, up in Galicia, is a long cooking.
Like a stew.
You boil it. And at least the story goes, that's always in the recipe. I don't know if it's sure because I have never tried to skip it, is that you first have to scare the octopus. So you have a big pot of boiling water, and you are supposed to stick it in, take it out, stick it in, take it out, stick it in, take it out, and then finally leave it inside.
Scare
it three times before you actually leave it in there for about half an hour. It depends on the weight of the octopus. Okay, but it also, I think Gio did a really wonderful grilled octopus. I think, what did you do? Marinate it and then throw it on the grill or something? What you're thinking about is not octopus. That I don't remember Gio grilling octopus. I remember Gio grilling squid. It was squid. Okay. All right. My bad there. Well, anyway, so back to Catalonian food.
Yes.
Do you not have octopus in Catalan food?
Oh, we do. We do. Yes.
Good. Among other things.
What's the
I've even had the chance to, when I was swimming, I actually have seen a couple of octopi swimming, caught them barehanded.
See, it's good to know what's in your environment. I do like that. Ooh, one of the wonderful things I do want to get around to talking about is this wonderful dish called paella. Do I say that right? Anyway, I've had it at
paella.
Your house, paella, and it's good. So, talk about that and the tradition, the food tradition there of making it and the variations. It's always so good. Have at it, Paula.
Paella is fantastic. In fact, the word paella is a Catalan word. It just means pan, as in flat pan. We would use the same word for the little pan that you use to fry an egg. That's still a paella. And you have a special pan that you've carried back from Barcelona. So describe it. It's about what, 3 inches deep? It's
about.
Round, and the diameter is what, 18 inches maybe? Yes, and there's different sizes. I actually have three different pans, depending on how many guests are coming to have paella. You'll make a smaller or bigger paella. So, but one has to, you brought yours back from Barcelona. Can they be ordered online or something? Yes, they can. And I've even seen them in specialty kitchen stores around the, I'm not sure in Ames, but definitely in Des Moines. So they can even be purchased locally. Now, you do this thing because the pan is so large, it doesn't just fit on one burner. So, right, what do you do? So when I'm cooking my paella, I use several burners on the stove, and I rotate the pan all the time. Explain the process. How do you start your paella? Well, so paella is a long process that is best done with friends so that you're not bored.
The total it takes maybe an hour to make?
Yes, that might be about right. Yeah, and you're there kind of stirring and adding and adjusting. It's a layered process, as it were.
Right.
And definitely once you add the rice and you start to cook the rice, you want all your guests to be there because we take our rice very seriously. We don't want our rice to be ever overcooked. That's a major sin for a paella.
And what kind of rice?
Short rice. I found that arborio works pretty well. Right, which is the same. It's an Italian rice, but you usually use it for risotto. So there is a relationship between risotto and paella, even in technique, in terms of a slow, long, starchy cooking.
Well, no, there's a huge difference in that the starchiness that you have in risotto, where everything is kind of gooey because you've stirred the rice, you actually try to avoid that completely in paella.
You don't want the goo.
No, and that's why you never stir the rice.
Oh, you don't stir it. Okay, now do you start out by frying it the way you do with the risotto?
Well, just a little bit, actually, because you start by frying onions and tomatoes and peppers.
Okay. Start with the vegetables.
Then you'll add your seafood. In fact, let me take that back. If your paella includes meat, chicken, pork, or rabbit, that's also a very common one in paellas, then you would start with that. Then
so you would like brown it, kind of.
Right. Then you push it to the side and you do...
The side of the pan, you mean?
Yes, to the side of the pan. Mm-hmm. If the pan is not big enough, maybe you take it out. And then you make a sofrito, a sofragit in Catalan, which is like the basis of so many dishes in all of Spain, which is fried tomato, onions, garlic...
Diced. Everything is diced.
Everything diced. Sometimes red pepper. And that needs to soften it at relatively mild heat.
Like a low sauté.
Exactly. Well,
in
you
olive
need
oil,
the flavors
right?
to come together. Of course, yes. Olive oil.
And then you add small dice. They're kind of like, you know, like you don't want a big chunk of pepper or onion. It's small.
Right. Yes. Small, I would say maybe half an inch.
Okay.
So relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So once you have your sofrito, then you can add the seafood, like squid. For instance, that's one that I love to add in there. Also cut into bite-sized pieces. And then at that point, that's when you add the rice and you will fry it a little bit, but there's already quite a bit of juice in the pan. So I'm not sure you can call it fry. And then you add the broth or water, make sure that
like
everything
a little
nice
at a time,
flat.
Kind of.
For the broth, no, you typically add all of it together.
Right, because you're not stirring it. So that's really not like risotto.
Okay. Right. In that sense, no. And that's why the result is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Your rice in paella has to be loose.
Okay. Now, are there any herbs that you add or any other seasonings at this point?
The queen of the paella seasonings is saffron.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would add toward the end as well, like with once the sofrito is made, when you're adding your seafood, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can add it, you can also dissolve it in the broth.
And when do you salt and do you use any kind of pepper?
Salt, pepper, yes. But that's about it. When your paella has no seafood, it's the what is called a paella valenciana, that is typically chicken and rabbit, then you would use a little rosemary, fresh as possible.
Huh. Okay.
But other than that, really no more spices.
Okay. Now, at this point, you're basically doing chicken and squid. What else?
And then once you have added the broth and mixed in with the rice, that's when you put your toppings. Those are the seafood that are going to be cooked just by the steam. So you just arrange them need mussels on top of the rice.
What else?
Mussels, clams, if you can find them in the shell.
Oh, right. You put the whole shell in, the mussel shell and the clam shell.
Yes.
The whole nine yards. Okay.
You bury them a little bit. You make sure that you're getting the opening of the shell sort of pointing down so that the steam will get into the shell. And then the juices will come out of the shell and go into the paella.
Right.
Yes. And that's when you also add your shrimp, which you arrange neatly on top. In Spain,
but the shrimp are peeled, right?
No, they are not peeled.
They are
not
peeled.
In Spain, they would always be with their head on, the whole thing. The head adds a lot of to the flavor.
A lot of flavor. Yeah.
So when you're ready to eat it, just remove the head.
Right. So at the dinner table, there's a lot of picking with your fingers because of the mussel shells and the clam shells and peel the shrimp and so you don't put in like flaky fish at all.
You can do that if you're doing a paella that is only seafood.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually want to use a fish that is that holds its shape. The best one would be monkfish, which is really hard to find around here. And that's why I actually don't make that option very often.
Okay, so paella is probably one of the more well-known, but it's not strictly from Catalonia.
Originally, Valencia claims it. I think they probably appropriate historical propriety. So I think that's okay.
I have heard you rage about people who put sausage in their paella. So do tell. Okay.
Actually, sausage is enough of a broad term that maybe you can put sausage, but not chorizo.
Other sausages, but not chorizo.
Yeah, milder sausages would be like adding pork. But chorizo.
Oh, okay.
Chorizo is
too dominant in its flavor. Okay.
Yes. That is not a Spanish thing.
Yes, chorizo is quite spicy, some more than others.
Well,
that happen?
Yeah, I've had the great pleasure of having this on the table in front of me, and it's a very pretty, pretty dish. It's, talk about a communal experience. There it is, and people just kind of, it's one of those dishes where you go around, you have some, but then you just always have to have a little bit more. It's just really good stuff.
Right, you always overeat. It's very difficult to not overeat.
It's a full meal itself, but you would have, what sort of things might you serve on the side?
A salad.
Oh, yeah?
I would not do anything other than a salad. Well, in Spain, very often you would, before the meal, you would might have been doing a little bit of a pica-pica.
Uh-huh.
Pica-pica is, which is you are
picking
around the table. Yeah, it's like pick-pick, I guess.
A little snacks, like, for example.
A little olives.
Some
canned seafood. Canned seafood is a big thing in Spain.
Yes, and it is a high art. It is not like the can of tuna that you open from Starkist here.
No, it is food. You can find really expensive cans just because the quality of the seafood that's in there.
Ooh. Like, for example, if you buy a jar of tuna that's been processed in Spain, usually it's like these lovely chunks and it's in a seasoned olive oil and it's quite... In fact, Lana, this just caught my eye. There are several, and I mean more than one, new cookbooks out dealing specifically with, as they say, tinned fish. So I might have to get one, and we might have to visit the subject
because
it is
This sounds really
good.
It's
exotic.
We've got lots more to talk about. We're going to take a little break here. This is KHOI, and you're listening to Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
One, dos.
És una foto del terrat que des d'aquí es pot veure Mart. La roba estesa al meu agost, un camp d'espigues i cargols. Esperarem que passi el fred i sota l'arbre parlarem de tot. Un bioritme elemental, un mar d'antenes i animals. Els astronautes volen baix, els núvols passen com qui no diu res. Amb les butxaques a les mans caminarem els passos d'altres peus. Esmorzarem pa amb oli i sal, ho vestirem amb unes copes de vi. Deixem davant de la ciutat la tarda llarga i potser més.
Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about Catalonia, the food and traditions of Catalan, with our friend Paula Herrera Ciclodi. And she's an Ames person, and we're glad to get to know her because not only does she cook good, she's a real fun person to be around too. Paula, that tune, tell us about the music we just heard.
Oh, that song makes me happy. So this is from a Catalan group, Blaumut. It's the perfect song for the show because its name is Bread with Oil and Salt. In fact, the song goes, Esmorzarem pa mol i sal. We'll have bread with oil and salt for breakfast. Breakfast can, actually, that word for breakfast can refer to something really late, like 11. Not necessarily your early morning breakfast. We have two breakfasts. I'll talk about that. and then we'll dress it up with a few glasses of wine. Sounds like quite a plan. Unas copas de vi.
I love it. So talk about
how do you have two breakfasts? So very often people will, in the morning, will only have a very light breakfast, café amb llet, just coffee with milk, and maybe nibble a little. And then around 10 or 11, we'll have a break from work and eat something. And then very often that's when you eat something more serious, and it can be like an entire sandwich. Because lunch happens at the earliest at 1 p.m. And if it's a Sunday meal with the whole family, it will be at 3 p.m. So, of course, you need to pick me up in the middle of the morning.
Then what time is dinner?
And dinner during weekdays will be at 8 or 9, 8 especially probably for the children. Or 9 for the adults. If you're meeting for dinner with friends, it will be 9 or 10. So you work 4 meals into the day. Excellent. Well, actually, because dinner is also so late, we tend to also have a pick-me-up in the middle of the afternoon.
We really like to eat.
What a civilized
country.
These are
small but frequent meals. Sometimes they are not that small. I do not understand how we are not all incredibly fat, but we're not. It must be the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, and maybe you don't eat potato chips or Doritos in between meals. Like the French don't really snack. It's just they've become as bad as everyone else. Well, not quite, but that has always been touted as the secret to why they're not fat, is that they're not eating between meals.
Yes, call it a meal. Call it a meal.
Yes. I mean, and even the snacks in between, at least traditionally, used to be something that you would sit down for. Mm-hmm. It's not something you eat on the go. There's definitely less mindless eating in front of the TV.
Or driving in the car or something like that.
Or driving in the car. Yeah. So, tell us about the tapas tradition. That's another way of eating a little bit. You get together with friends and you have a little nibble of this and that. They are small
plates.
The whole tradition has been very co-opted by a lot of, certainly restaurants, but other people too. And it's very often not supposed to be a meal. It's supposed to be something you eat
with a drink
while you're having a drink with friends. In fact, the story goes, I don't know if it's true or not, but the story goes that the reason they are called tapas, means cover or lid in Spanish, or Catalan, actually. And the story goes that it was something you would put on top of your glass so that you don't get any bugs that get into your drink. So you would have a slice of bread with something on top, and you would cover your glass. It developed into something a lot more sophisticated, but at least that might be where the name comes from.
Oh, I thought it was the wisdom of having a little food with your alcohol to kind of, so you don't get so, no drinking on an empty stomach, as it were.
I think that it definitely plays that role. I'm just saying where the name might come from. I've heard that story. I don't know if it's true, but I find it hilarious.
Do people actually do, like Americans that have started doing all of these small plate dinners, calling them tapas? In Spain, does that actually end up being a tradition too, where you're just having a series of small plates all evening long with your friends and your
beverages? Uh-huh. It can be done, yes, and it is done nowadays just because tapas are so delicious, but it was definitely not the tradition.
Okay, give us a few examples of a quintessential tapas, you know, a couple of plates of what you would order in a bar in Barcelona.
I would start with truita de patatas, which is like a frittata. An Italian frittata.
It's
egg and potato and onions.
In little slices or something.
Or in little cubes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
cubes.
And in Catalonia, that would always be served with pan tomàquet. Pan tomàquet, it's bread rubbed with tomatoes. Actually, that brings me back to the song, because in the song they say they are going to eat bread with olive oil and salt. But, of course, they also mean rubbed with tomato. In fact, if you look at the video...
And did you say garlic and tomato?
Yes, garlic and tomatoes. I think it's one of the best culinary inventions in Catalonia.
Explain the technique.
Yeah. You take a piece of bread, something like a baguette or a ciabatta. It needs to be something that has a crust, not
like
a sandwich
like an
bread.
Inch thick or something like that?
Yeah, something typically that you can put in your toaster, because I prefer, you can do it without toasting, but I like it toasted. You're going to take a clove of garlic and cut it in half so that you can take one of the halves and rub it.
So you have a surface
on
that
the bread.
You rub the flat surface on the crusty piece of bread. So you're really getting the garlic oils into the surface of the bread, right?
Right.
And where, then, you put the salt on then?
Hold on.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
First garlic,
followed by tomato. You take a nice ripe tomato. It needs to be ripe. That's very important. Your classic salad tomato won't work. It needs to be nice and soft. Obviously, not to the point where it's starting to
have a little
vinegary,
a little
smell,
juice in it. Yeah,
but it needs to be nice and ripe. You cut it in half, and you rub it again. Same thing against the bread, so then you're getting the juices and the seeds out, and you're leaving that on the bread. So now we have garlic and tomato, and now we can add salt. A little salt and a nice drizzle of olive oil, some good olive oil. That is the basis to eat all kinds of sausage or cheese or your frita de patatas, the potato omelet. That would translate as potato omelet, but it doesn't quite convey what it looks like. Anchovies, you can put anchovies. Then you might want to skip the salt.
Very good.
We're big fans of anchovies in Catalonia.
Ah, very good.
All right.
There is another thing that I would kind of like to talk about would be the gazpacho that you made with, well, there's all kinds of gazpacho, but you made one with watermelon in season, and it was lovely. Talk about that.
That was definitely not your traditional gazpacho. Your traditional gazpacho does not have watermelon.
Okay, so is this your own personal version? We've made it, and we've talked about it on the show last summer because I loved it, and it's so easy.
It is fantastic. It works fantastic. One of the problems I had with tomato gazpacho here in the U.S. is that tomatoes are not as cheap as they are in Spain when they are in season. And so finding enough tomatoes to make gazpacho was something that I could usually do for like 2 weeks here without destroying my budget. So when I came across this idea of putting watermelon, unfortunately, I cannot blame to have had that idea. I read it somewhere. I found that it was fantastic. So it's your traditional gazpacho basis, which is tomato, just tomatoes in the blender, garlic, olive oil, some breadcrumbs, salt, pepper, and a little drizzle of wine vinegar. But
and
then
sort of
I add
much,
watermelon.
Do you add equal parts tomato and watermelon?
Yes, about that.
Kind of. Kind
yes,
of.
More or less. I eyeball it every time.
And then you add a few ice cubes and blitz the whole thing in the blender.
The ice cubes are, I add that actually afterwards.
I blitz
the whole thing in the blender.
And then sherry vinegar, right? Did you say that?
Sherry vinegar or wine vinegar, some kind of vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Not too much.
The olive oil is extremely important. The olive oil and the bread, because those are the two ingredients that make this taste like a soup, like
they
a
bind it,
dish,
yeah,
as opposed to
a smoothie.
Without those, I think it would taste like a smoothie.
Right. So you put some crusty, almost dried bread,
mm-hmm,
and then a really good olive oil.
Really good olive oil and generous amounts.
Well, and I love it because it's really fast and easy to make, and in the summertime, it's just delicious. So maybe we'll try to get a written recipe out of you and post it at least by summer. We'll bring it up again when everything's back in season. It was a big hit. Now, the other thing that we made during the Christmas season was, and Lana and I were at Paula's house making these little things. What are they called? The cookie thingies?
Panellets.
Spell it.
Even though they are not supposed to be eaten for Christmas. But that's when I have time to make them, and I love them. So any excuse to make panellets is a good excuse.
And spell panellets.
P-A-N-E-L-L-E-T-S.
Okay. All right. So you and Lana talk about making the panellettes because it was fun. Okay, so panellettes are actually a tradition for November 1st in Spain. Well, not in Spain, in Catalonia. And they are an almond-based, I guess I could call them a cookie, yes? Yeah? It's a sweet. So it's equal parts of almond flour and sugar, and then some cooked potato to bind the whole thing.
Just like a white mashed potato with
a
nothing
white,
in it.
Yes. You just cook a couple of potatoes. It's supposed to be half the amount of potato as you put flour, the almond flour or the sugar.
Yeah, and you put your cooked potato through the ricer, so it's pretty finely
right.
Minced.
And then you add some lemon rind to that and
like
work
zest.
It with your hands.
Yes,
lemon zest, as small as possible. And work it with your hand to make a paste. Then you shape it into little balls. They are
like
a little
an inch and
smaller,
a half.
Yes, a little smaller than a golf ball. And then we're going to cover them or decorate them with nuts. Now, for that, we need some kind of glue. So before you start adding the decorations, you coat the balls first with cornstarch, and then you get the whole thing through egg whites that have been whipped.
So first you roll you. It was like a process here, and we were all working at it in a little like assembly line. So you roll them, you roll the ball, then you dip it in the cornstarch, and then you dip it in the egg white, and then you press the nut into it,
and then you press the nut into it.
Correct.
And
then
you
bake it.
And then you put them on your baking sheet. Before, there's one extra step at the end where you paint the whole thing with egg yolk.
Oh,
egg
the yolk
goes,
yes. Okay.
To make them nice, it gives them a nice color and it makes them shiny. And then you need to bake them. It's very short. I bake them for about 8 minutes at 400 degrees and then 8 more minutes at 325. But during the last part, you have to keep an eye on them because once they start getting golden on top, they should go out even if the 8 minutes have not passed. It is relatively easy to burn them or at least overcook them. You have to keep an eye on them.
They would probably dry out. So, Lana, what was your favorite thing about the panellettes? Lana's a big fan of panellettes.
Well, now you say they're not a Christmas cookie, but I think of them as a Christmas cookie. What's nice about them is that they're soft on the inside, a little crunchy on the outside. They don't taste like anything else, and they seem to, although I eat a lot of them, they seem to last. I mean, they have a nice texture and a nice keeping quality that is really, really nice. And they're pretty. That's important. Oh, you also, besides putting, you put a pecan or a walnut right on top of each cookie, but you also pine nuts. You rolled them in pine nuts, too, so they were good. I don't know. They're a satisfying thing. And when you think, oh, this is made out of almond flour?
Almonds. Yeah.
And potatoes. And it's good. It's really good. And there's no butter in it. So there you go. Good. Anyway, thanks for sharing that recipe with us. I love that one. Oh, I'll take this opportunity to say this is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about Catalonia today with Paula. How nice, how nice. What kind of got us going is a book called Catalan Food, Culture, and Flavors of the from the Mediterranean by Daniel Olivella. And Donna got that from the library. There's a lot of good books in the library. One of the pages in there mentioned something, and it had a good picture, too. It mentioned the festival of the black-footed chicken. And although, Paula, you said you've never heard of it, but he said that that was real popular in his town because their black-footed chicken in the author's town was a point of pride. It was one of those traditional, geographically protected species. So can you talk about festivals and food festivals and good things in Catalonia, Paula?
Yes. Yes, I had never heard of that particular festival, but then we have so many festivals that are very local, and most of them are devoted to food. So, as I say, I cannot talk much about this one because I'm learning about it at the same time as you. But I can talk, for instance, about a really big one in the area of Catalonia that is not by the sea, Lleida. They have a huge tradition of snails.
Ooh.
And they have, in particular, a big snail festival in the summer where the entire town comes to a stop for a few days because it's all about partying and eating snails. All the different groups in town will have their own tents where you can go dance and drink and try some of the snail specialties that they're offering.
Do with the snails?
Well, there's so many different options. I think two of my favorites are cargolos a la llauna, where you just take your snails and put them on a metal tray and drizzle them with salt, pepper, and olive oil. Maybe there's a little garlic in there, I'm not sure. I have never made the dish myself. It's something I've many, many times, but always in restaurants. And you cook this in the oven or even on open fire. It's very simple and absolutely delicious. You're supposed to pry the snails out with a toothpick. They're very, very salty and very peppery. It's excellent.
So these are not
sea
snails. These are land snails.
These are land snails. And another of my favorites is snails cooked with rabbit. That's a stew.
Ooh!
Which is bound to make you very messy. It's a very messy to eat because your stew has, you know, a tomato sauce and you have no option but to eat your snails with your hands. There's no other way to get the meat out of the shell. But it's totally worth getting very messy. I had the chance to be at that festival a few years ago with Gio, and it was massive amounts of fun.
Well, it sounds a little, I would say the only Ames equivalent might be our pancake breakfast on the July 4th celebration. I know in France there's the same kinds of traditions. Like I once went to a scallop festival at a small town in Brittany where, you know, the whole town turned out to eat scallops in 45 different ways, you know, and there's big tents with tables and people have benches and you're sitting around eating with all the community and drinking. And, I mean, we should be having a pork festival in Iowa or a corn on the cob festival or something like that. It's all about celebrating what you are producing locally that is very unique.
Absolutely.
All based on food, of course.
I'm all for a corn festival.
Sounds wonderful.
Oh. Lana?
Oh, so, Paula, do you have anything to say about if someone goes to your home region of Spain, Catalonia, and what should they taste? What should they look for? What is the thing that you would show them if you went there for a visit?
Oh, good grief. That's a very difficult question.
Or some. Okay.
thing, right? Everything? Honestly, eating well in Catalonia is, or in Spain, is just very easy because typically every little corner, every little restaurant will have good food.
Well, also,
it's a very difficult question.
Well, it sounds wonderful. Also, the fact that Barcelona is there, that always has seemed like such a magical city to me. For one thing, it's warm, and I'm thinking warm this time of year. That's really, really good. That's great. Do you get back to visit often?
I try to go as often as I can. Unfortunately, my family moved to Germany. It's hard because I have to go visit my family and then just go to Catalonia to visit Catalonia. But yes, that's home. I've been here in Ames for almost 20 years, and it does feel like home. But Catalonia is different. It's special. I have a big piece of my heart there.
Oh,
so I definitely go as often as I can.
And I have to say, this particular cookbook had a lot of pictures, not just of the food, but a lot of pictures of things in Catalonia. So it's fun just to look at the book.
And I enjoyed the pictures a lot.
It's nice to be able to take a cookbook vacation, especially when it's so cold here in the center of Iowa, and to realize that people eat well. What else is there besides foods, friendship? And I think your idea of olive oil, bread, salt, and of course, don't forget the tomatoes. That's a really good basis for a lot of good things, Paula.
It's a very good beginning and very simple. I recommend that everybody try it.
Very good. We've been talking with Paula Herrera Ciclotti, and she is a fine friend of ours and a good cook right here in central Iowa. We talked about the section of Spain referred to as Catalonia, and that's where, like she said, that's where her heart is for a lot of the time. Boy, thank you for being with us, Paula.
My pleasure. It was Yao.
Oh, very good. I want to mention that we have a upcoming event here. If this is your opportunity to help this station, for every $25 you donate to KHOI by noon tomorrow, that's by noon tomorrow, C.Y. Stevens here in Ames will give you a ticket to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So go to khoifm.org and find out about that. That's good. You can donate some money to this fine radio station. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We had music today by a band called La Mut from Catalonia. And also the tune The Butterfly by a band from Minnesota named Amaryllis. Keep up the good work with wearing your mask, washing your hands, and be kind. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
I'm Donna Presenta.
We have fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.